Hello one, hello all. Welcome back to another installment of the special new series Super Podcast in Conversation right here at supermarcy.com on the Super Network. I'm of course your host, Super Marcy, because who else would it be, right? and for this installment of the show, as I've been doing, I've been getting different sorts of guests, and for this one, I have found somebody from my own hometown of Adelaide, South Australia, and he also happens to be a wrestler, so kind of combines something that means a lot to me in life, which is wrestling, and the hometown flavor, so that's fantastic. But if you haven't tuned into a Super Podcasting Conversation before, or it's your first time on any kind of super podcast, this is what it's about. This is more of a scaled back podcast where it's just myself, me, your host, and a guest. And rather than conduct the usual interview, this is more, I guess, personal, getting down to the nitty gritty of just, you know, things about life and all sorts of things. And, you know, hopefully by the end, I want my listeners to feel kind of inspired, like hearing about somebody's story and sort of know that, you know, a lot is possible. You don't have to just sit back and watch other people live their lives. You can get out there, work hard, and achieve what you want to achieve. So that's the aim. Hopefully, hopefully the aim is getting there and getting across to people. So I hope this new show really gets enjoyed. I am joined by Australian wrestling superstar Damien Slater, and you have an easy name to say, so I don't have to worry about mispronouncing it. So thank you for having a cool name.
True, superstar's a strong word there.
Nah, you're a pretty decent wrestler.
Pretty decent. Probably a little more accurate.
You're better than me. Not that I've ever wrestled in any capacity that wasn't like wrestling my 6-year-old niece or something. So
that's where I began. So if I can do it, you can do it.
Yeah. I think I'll leave it to the cool people like you who are actually athletic and can do all sorts of cool stuff.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay. I'll just leave it to the trained professional.
Yeah, I'll just scream from the sidelines or something. I'll just give out death stares, I don't know.
That's smart. That's a smart idea.
Yeah, so for those lovely listeners listening, I guess you've sort of had, I don't know if it would be a surge in popularity or something because you just competed on the CWC with WWE, had a match which I guess was well received. I don't know. You have to tell me if it was.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think the biggest thing is just exposure. It's obviously the WWE is the biggest professional wrestling or sports entertainment company in the world. So to go from a position where I was maybe partially known with local fans and maybe even less so with online fans around the world, to go from that to performing on TV on their network, which has, I believe, 2 million or so subscribers, that's just a huge jump in exposure. So that's the biggest thing I probably found from it, was just overall, it kind of went from one day not really getting much attention online and things like that, so the next day and my phone's just going off the hook for a few weeks straight. So yeah, so you realize when you're there just how wide it reaches. I mean, I had people from Germany and around Europe sending fan mail and things like that, and I guarantee most of them had no idea who I was until that one single solitary match on TV that aired. So yeah, it's a massive, massive jump in exposure more than anything.
Well, it's not too shabby. I mean, you couldn't ask for anything better, I guess.
No, it's the ultimate. It's the absolute ultimate in this industry. It's exactly,
yeah,
it's exactly what most people strive to. I mean, you can still make a career for yourself and get your name out there in other countries and other promotions, but WWE is far and beyond the biggest and the most successful in the whole world.
Nothing quite like that. And you were the sole, I guess, representative of our beautiful country.
I was. I was the Stephen Bradbury of the Cruiserweight Classic, put it that way. But I didn't quite get the same outcome.
Well, you went up against a veteran and you lost.
I did. I did, unfortunately.
I mean, you know, not that I want to, like, continuously just talk about wrestling for this thing, but just, you know, it's kind of funny that when I was, like, really heavily watching it and my parents started watching it with me, and this was about the time when Tajiri actually came in WWE, and just instantly it was, like, my dad's favorite, and, like, even still now my dad will still ask about him, even though he hasn't watched it in, like, 10 years. It just makes me laugh just for that reason.
Yeah. Well, I mean, going into it, like, the one thing I said was, I don't know how far I'm going to get in this thing and I don't know what's going to come from it, but if I'm going to lose early, if I'm going to be a flash in the pan, then if I can lose to the most famous guy there, that would be the most ideal scenario. And, yeah, they told me I was matched up with Tajiri, who just happened to be a former Cruiserweight champion and a big name back in, I guess, 98 to around 2003 or 4. He was a big name in the WWE and ECW and all those top promotions. So, yeah, to lose to him is making the most of I guess not the best situation.
Yeah, but no, it went well. And I guess, like, the thing that we both now have in common is that we are both South Australians.
Correct.
We're both from little old Adelaide.
Well, the difference is you moved and I stayed here.
Yeah, so. I escaped. What's your excuse now?
I think I move around enough that having a little home base in Adelaide isn't too bad.
Yeah,
it's
nice. I mean, must be good to get back home.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get back nearly as much as I would like to because all the family's still there.
You never do.
Yeah, but what part of Adelaide did you grow up in?
I've always kind of lived in the same area, which is on the coast. So I grew up in a suburb called Kidman Park, which is right near Henley Beach. That would be the closest beach, about 5 minutes from the beach. And I moved around that area, all around the western suburbs, throughout my childhood, and I currently still reside on the west. So, I've always been a bit of an ocean child.
Lucky you! I'm very envious because I love Henley.
Yeah,
I think did I go there last time I was in Adelaide? I can't remember which beach I went to now. But see, growing up, for me, the beach was like, I don't know, an hour drive or whatever. Probably wasn't an hour. It felt like an hour because, like, I wanted to get to the beach.
Whereabouts were you based?
I was born in Elizabeth, so don't judge me.
Good old Elizabeth.
Good old Elizabeth, yeah. and I spent most of my childhood and teenage years in Para Hills, and then I moved to, like, Norwood and then Campbelltown.
Gotcha.
So,
well, I work in the northern suburbs, so I am all too familiar with where you would have grown up.
Yeah. I'm always embarrassed to tell people because it's got, like, that reputation.
It does. Yeah. I mean, look, there's some nice areas everywhere now, but it's still kind of, once you pass the city limits and you head north, it doesn't matter how nice your area is, you've got that stank, I guess.
Yeah. And it's funny because my brother will always kind of tell me, like, because I swear so much, and he's like, that's the Elizabeth in you. I'm like, yeah, thanks. Thanks so much.
It was named after Queen Elizabeth, which is funny.
Yeah.
But doesn't the Queen, I'm pretty sure the Queen actually visits, or when the royal family visit, they always go to Elizabeth first, which is hilarious.
Because, yeah.
I mean, for those who don't know the area well, I mean, it's definitely changing, but Elizabeth doesn't have the best reputation.
No.
in terms of its socioeconomic status, I guess.
Yeah, it's sometimes being rough and crime, all of that. Crime, I guess,
probably isn't the best out there. So.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Like, again, like actually having like a podcast and being able to talk to someone, and go, yeah, Elizabeth or whatever. Like, you know what I'm talking about.
That's it.
Yeah. So I guess, like, as I mentioned, like, just to stay away from wrestling for a bit, like, growing up, what sort of, like, I don't want to be, like, one of these, what sort of childhood did you have? But, like, what sort of stuff did you do growing up? Like, how would you entertain yourself as a kid growing up on the coast? Aside from probably going to the beach in summer.
I guess I had, like, almost like two eras in my childhood. So when I discovered pro wrestling, which was probably early 1999, and I was just coming to the end of primary school, from then on, that was instantly my life and my obsession. I remember going to a friend's house for a birthday party, and I'd obviously heard of wrestling, but I'd never watched it at all. I just heard that it was just some fake stuff on TV. So I thought, why would you even bother with that? So, they had it on TV one night at my mate's house, and we watched that, and I would have been about 11, and I just remembered my mind being blown, and then I just instantly wanted to know everything about everything and the history, and that's all I would watch for years and years, and that's all I would do, and all my friends, I kind of gravitated to people who had the exact same interest. But before that, it was different. I mean, before that, I was pretty much just completely obsessed with sport. I mean, the more I kind of talk about it, I think I've got a bit of an obsessive personality. When I develop an interest, I'm 100% into that, and that's it.
I understand completely.
But yeah, I mean, like before that, from a young age, it was sport. Every sport you can think of, I had to try it. But specifically, soccer, cricket, they were my two biggest ones. And that's all I did. I just watched it all day. And if I wasn't watching it, I was playing it. And if it was too dark to play it and it was nighttime, then I'd be playing a video game about it or reading about it. And it was just a sport obsession that, again, it just consumed me completely until I was around 11 or 12.
Have you ever kept up to date, like, with watching cricket or soccer or anything like that?
I'm still a big fan. There was a time. So from when I started watching wrestling at 12 until about 15, when I actually started doing it, I still played a lot of cricket and soccer and all the rest, and played the sports as well as loving wrestling. But as soon as I actually started doing it and training in it, I quit everything. I quit every sport I played. I was playing cricket at a pretty high level, and I quit it completely, just cold turkey. And I never really watched it again. In the last couple of years, I've gotten back into it, and I support a few teams, generally the Adelaide teams, and I go to every A-League soccer game, and I go to every cricket game over here. But that's really only the last 2 years. I had a big 10-year void where I just did not watch or keep up with any sport at all. That's the level of the obsession I had with pro wrestling and mixed martial arts as well in there. So. It's only recently that I've kind of come back into civilization and started to go back into the loop of what's popular.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like me. Not that I didn't play sport, but I used to watch like cricket and soccer and AFL like constantly, like obsessed. Like I was obsessed with like basketball and NBA and all that stuff, and like growing up with cricket and that being like everyone goes sit down to watch it, and then like going more into like high school, it was like soccer and Italian soccer and European soccer and getting up at all hours of the night to watch it.
And I then feel like it could have something to do with the fact that back then everything was a lot more simple. You know, you had three TV stations, and if there was cricket on, then you were either watching that or you were watching some kind of boring cooking show or something.
Yeah.
Whereas now, I mean, any time of the day, you can watch a million different things on Netflix, or you can scour YouTube, or you've got hundreds of channels on Foxtel. So it seems a lot easier to branch out and have different interests these days.
Yeah. Like, I remember, was it, like, 96 maybe with, like, the household got, like, pay TV and stuff. Yeah. So, from like, then on, like, the access to watch, like, European soccer and stuff was there. So, it'd be, like, middle of the night watching it or, you know. But then, like, having this massive break and only really, like, even just now, last couple of years, actually kind of re-following it and, you know, even watching AFL again. And, yeah. Like, you know, that's a big thing for, like, in the family with the freaking rivalries between Port Adelaide and Adelaide Crows.
Oh, tell me about it. My, my mum and my stepdad are... Mum's a Crows supporter and my stepdad's a Port supporter, so I know all about that rivalry.
Yeah, no, in the family, we're all for the Crows, but then extended family is all for Port, so when we get together, there's a bit of clashing going on, which is always fun. The best
thing is, I absolutely hate AFL, so it's just perfect. I don't care.
You don't care. Yeah, and I haven't even, like, it's only recently, last couple of years, I've actually watched it and caught up with it and, like, anything. This is weird. Like, I was so into it, then I just wasn't. But I can, just other things kind of take over.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
There's much out there. I mean, it's like I said, it's really not hard to track things down. So I guess that's the problem I find. I get these, so many different interests, and I have to obsess over one, and then I'll be like, oh, hold on. Didn't I like soccer for a while? And then it's like I haven't watched a game in 2 years. And it's, I have like an OCD/ADD brain, so it's like all over the place, but then it gets obsessed with things. And, yeah, it's hard to keep up.
What are you currently obsessing over now?
Oh, good question. At the moment, my big obsession would probably be playing FIFA, I reckon. It's always the same game. Every year they release a new game, but I will just play it constantly. And it's the same thing over and over, but for some reason I just feel drawn to play it as much as possible, and I don't know why. And it's not even playing against people online or playing anything competitively. I'm just playing against the computer over and over again. But, something... I just get these little obsessions and that's it. I have to play it until I don't feel the urge to play it anymore.
What do you play it on, console,
I'm guessing? Yeah, PlayStation. PlayStation 4 is my go-to.
Everyone is a PlayStation 4 and on Xbox One.
Yeah. I've been PlayStation since the beginning, and again, as soon as a new console comes out, I have to get it. I have to do whatever I can to get it. The weird thing I have.
I know. I was always like in the older games, like Nintendo and Nintendo 64, and I think I played my Nintendo 64 for so many years after it came out.
Yeah.
And then eventually got like a PS2, and then I got a Wii, and then a Wii U, and then 360, and now an Xbox One.
Well, that's kind of skipping all over.
Yeah, it is really. I've always been a Nintendo kind of person, so.
Oh, yeah, who isn't? I think everyone was.
Yeah.
Back in the day. That Sega, but no one wanted to hang around the Sega weirdos.
Yeah, no, we didn't. I was a lucky one that had a Nintendo, so people would come to me to play Nintendo.
I remember there was always one kid on the street who had Mortal Kombat, so we used to... The entire neighborhood would kind of gather at his house because no one was allowed to have it except him. So obviously he had some pretty laxed parents who didn't really care about it. But that was the thing to do. As soon as it hit Saturday morning and you woke up in the morning, it was get on the bike and go and play Mortal Kombat at Stuart's house.
I remember like playing like Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat when being too young to actually be playing it. But then I like remember like Mortal Kombat, the arcade machine, and like, sneaking off from the parents to go play the arcade machine.
Yeah. Which is awesome. I mean, like, I'm a primary school teacher, and I have a lot of 6-year-olds who come up to me and tell me about Grand Theft Auto 5 and all the cool things they did in it. And I'm thinking, like, I play that game. I didn't tell them that, but I mean, I play that game. It's R-rated. Probably not the best game for a six-year-old.
Yeah, and
the next minute they're dancing along to a song from Toy Story. It's just, it's insane.
Yeah, see, I don't think I'd be letting my six-year-old niece play that game.
Well, I'm not sure if the parents are aware that they're playing it.
I think there's a big difference between, like, the games you weren't allowed to play when we were children and the games that children shouldn't be playing now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit weird. Like, I'm so...
When I was a kid, the only... I think the only restricted game that was off limits was Leisure Suit Larry. I remember that one.
I remember playing that game.
That was the forbidden game. Everything else was cool, but that was the forbidden game that no one was allowed to play that.
I wonder what, like, that original game would be like now, because I barely remember it.
I think it was actually quite tame from memory.
It would have been now, but it'd be so funny to, like, revisit that now.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I remember because, like, I don't think my parents really kept up to date with, like, all the games and stuff. Just, like, if there was violence or something, you're not allowed it. And same with movies. But then you go to a cousin's or friend's house and then just watch them all anyway.
Yeah, of course. There's no way to keep things from kids. They're eventually going to see it.
Well, yeah. Well, that was kind of the fun growing up in, like, the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
The 90s were fun.
Life was a lot simpler.
It was. Like, getting magazines to, like, get all the cheats for your Nintendo game.
Yeah, that was it.
Couldn't go online to do it.
I mean, even going online was difficult because it was all dial-up, and if someone was on the phone, you couldn't go on. And
yeah.
If your minutes had run out, you couldn't go on. So you'd kind of have to, you know, a friend would bring a piece of printed out paper to school with a bunch of cheats, and you'd frantically write it down, and it would get shared around, and you'd just source things yourself.
I think that's the
difference. I don't want to sound like an old man, you know, telling kids to get off their lawn, get off his lawn. But
yeah,
it's everything's too easy these days. I find like a Google search, and there you go, the whole world's at your fingers. We had to actually source stuff and find stuff and negotiate and communicate and socialize. It was a tough world.
We did. We had to go to libraries and find books and, you know, talk to people. It's so weird to think about, like, how different things were and things are now.
Here's what kills me is the biggest thing for kids that I've found for primary school kids is they don't actually play games anymore. They actually just watch people play games on YouTube, which I don't understand.
I don't
get it.
I don't really get it either, but then, like, if I'm playing something, like, my niece sometimes prefers to watch me play the game rather than play it herself. And I'm just, I can't sit and watch someone play because I want to play.
What? Exactly. I remember, like, fighting over the controller because you wanted the shot.
I know.
Now they want to give you the controller and just watch you play.
It's weird. I think I get, like, performance anxiety with someone watching me play.
Exactly.
Which is funny. Like, you know, having the six-year-old niece and, you know, being a good auntie that I am, I've got, like, you know, Lego games and stuff that's kid-friendly, but then she'll want to sit and watch some freaking shooting game. It's like, well, I don't know if you should be watching that. I'm like, you're not watching Mortal Kombat 10, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But, I mean, funnily enough, she absolutely just loves watching me play the WWE 2K16 to the point where she's like, oh, can you make me as a character? I'm like, all right. And then she, like, won her first match, got so excited, and then she couldn't do it again and got upset.
That's a little more tame than watching someone get thrown into a pit of spikes.
Yeah, well, it's fine. But it's like, got to have that, you know, since she was, I don't know, like, three, she'd seen me watch it on, like, TV, and then I've got to have that conversation and be like, now, this is how it works. Don't be doing anything you see. Fully explaining it to her, going, do you understand? Yes. Then that night, my sister rings like, she's wrestling with her Dorothy the Dinosaur. That wasn't me. I explained everything to her. It's not my fault. But now she's older, she gets it better now.
I had a bunch of kids in trouble for wrestling in the schoolyard, and when I had to discipline them, they just seemed excited that I was the one disciplining them, because obviously they'd seen me on TV and stuff, and I'm trying to tell them that they shouldn't be wrestling, that it's, you know, it's only for trained professionals. And I mean, underneath, I'm kind of like, I'm a little bit proud at the same time. Like, good on you. Good on you guys for giving it a go. But I've got to put on the disciplinary adult face.
Well, yeah, you do.
Pretend that I'm really disappointed with their actions.
But secretly, it's like, nah, they well care. Done, well
they just love that. They just love that a wrestler came and told them off. So,
oh, that's amazing. it's kind of funny trying to have like that conversation with children. And, like, realizing now she's a little bit older, she kind of gets it more. But, like, she'll still want to, like, you know, wrestle around or whatever. But I find that rather than, like, people hitting each other, she finds the humor in the funnier stuff. Like, I think it was a few years ago, there was a sliming incident that she just thought was the funniest thing ever. Like, seeing someone get slimed in the middle of the ring was so funny.
Yeah,
so sure. I kind of think, yeah, that's all right. And then she, like, acted it out for the next year or something. Like, yeah, I'm glad that got on, not someone, like, getting smacked in the face or something.
No, you're right, though. Like, just from listening to kids spill their lives to me, and I find the biggest thing is that the girls tend to kind of go towards more that stuff, whereas the boys are always like, oh, you know, did you see that cool choke slam and that kind of thing. So they seem to be more about the physicality and the cool moves, whereas the girls seem to really enjoy the characters and the funny moments and things like that. So there's definitely a bit of a difference there.
It's kind of funny, and she'll kind of sit there and go, who are you going for? Well, I'm going for that one. Oh, me too. Got to impress the aunties, which is funny. So how did you actually, like, what interested you in, like, becoming a teacher?
I think it was my time spent as a trainer. So I've been training people in professional wrestling since I was, I guess, 19, roughly. I've been wrestling since I was 15, and there was only one place in Adelaide to do it, just one trainer and one school, which was actually in Salisbury, not too far from Elizabeth.
Know that area pretty well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So as a 15-year-old, I used to venture out into the sticks and train to wrestle there, but when I was 19, that place was closing up, and it was actually kind of separating into a few different promotions, and my promotion, I was basically given a bit of a step up, and they wanted me to help out with training, only in a small way at that point because I was only about 4 or 5 years in.
Mm.
So I just helped out a little bit here and there. But, I was helping out with training, and I just really enjoyed the whole training people. I enjoyed talking to people and coaching them and things like that. And I really had no idea what I wanted to do with my life outside of wrestling. And I'd taken, I guess this was probably a year after I finished year 12, and I had absolutely no idea what I wanted to do. I was studying a business degree, and I hated it. It just wasn't for me.
Mm.
And I dropped out of that after a year, and I was just at this crossroads, and I thought, I don't know what I want to do, but I know that I love coaching people. I love training people. So I went into a human movement degree at uni and started learning all about physical activity and how to also train people in physical activity. And there's generally with those degrees, there's a few ways you can go. You can go into a physiotherapy aspect, you can go into a health studies, and then you can also go into teaching. And by the end of the degree, I really gravitated more towards the teaching side of things, and I felt that I always got along with kids well, I think just because I'm completely immature as well. So I just thought, well, that's naturally the way to go. And of all the things that could complement what I do in pro wrestling, that would be the one where I can still kind of still be a bit of a fool. And I mean, there's a big part of acting we're teaching. Even though we're teaching content and that kind of thing, a lot of it is, you know, there's a psychology to it, just like there's a psychology to wrestling. And you're always working to an audience in the same way that we do at a live show. You know, I'm trying to engage kids and I'm trying to make them excited for what they're learning. And you've got to connect with different people in different ways. And that's no different to when you wrestle a show. And, you know, one show you might have a crowd full of adults who maybe love everything you do and certain things work. And then another show you have a lot of kids and they like something completely different. So I find there's a lot of parallels between teaching and that. And there's actually quite a few teachers in pro wrestling, funnily enough. So, yeah, it was a natural transition, I find.
How long have you been teaching?
I've been teaching for, this would be my third year out of university. So I've been working full-time for the last 2 years, and before that I was a little bit casual because I was doing a lot of travel, which I'm still doing, but I'm at a pretty good school who are super cool with all of the days away that I've been taking. I've already had 3 overseas trips this year, and fortunately I still have my job, so that's a good thing.
That's pretty cool. At least you've still got that. So you teach, obviously, the younger kids.
Yeah, I teach grade 4, year 5 and 6. So I'm saying grade. I've had all these American podcasts. So, but no, I teach year 5 and 6.
I was gonna say, isn't it year, not grade, in this country?
It's a year. I don't know. Whatever. They're 10-year-olds. That's all you gotta know.
Yeah.
But I was actually a high school PE teacher when I came out of uni, and I mean, it was hard to get work in that field as well. It's just that many qualified teachers and not many jobs, but I just didn't enjoy it that much. High school kids were fine, but I felt like, I don't know, maybe I'm too immature for even the high school kids. I just found I got along with the younger kids a lot better.
Yeah.
And so luckily I landed a job in primary school, and I was completely thrown into the deep end, and I really had no idea how to teach at a primary level. And I wasn't teaching PE anymore. I'm actually currently just classroom teacher, so I'm teaching maths and English and science and all the rest. And I got thrown in the deep end, and since day one, I just loved it. And I felt like that was the path for me. So I've had a little bit of a transfer of skills in the last couple of years.
Sounds like it. I'm just sitting here like fascinated, listening, going, wow, okay. Like, wow, that's interesting. I have no idea.
Yeah. Sometimes I think that I lead a pretty boring life, but then I'm regularly reminded of just how crazy it's been and all the insane things I've done before I've hit 30. But I've somehow managed to always lead a double life where I'm working a normal 9-to-5 kind of job and having a normal family and social life, and then when nighttime comes or when the weekend comes, I'm on a plane and I'm a superstar in some place around the world. So I do enjoy it though, because as cool as it is to be a pro wrestler and that kind of thing and have all the spotlight, at the same time, it's kind of cool to come back and just be a nobody and just blend in and do something normal for a change. So I like having two parts of my life.
Yeah. I can't speak. I think I need speech therapy or something.
That comes often.
Blah, blah, blah. My mouth just doesn't know how to talk sometimes. you've basically got like two lives. How the hell do you like manage to juggle that? I mean, I honestly have what I think is a pretty regular, boring life, you know, doing my website stuff, being a film critic, doing podcasts, and then being the helper in the family, looking after my niece, and now I'm looking after their new puppy. And, you know, for me, it's like hardly anything, and I feel like overwhelmed sometimes. But then, like, you know, you're a bloody teacher and then you're a wrestler. Like, how the hell do you juggle and manage all of that? And still stay, I guess, relatively sane. I'm guessing you're a little bit sane at the moment.
I'm fairly, I wouldn't say normal, but I'm definitely sane.
I don't think anyone's really normal.
No, especially not if you're doing what I'm doing, but I really enjoy it. And I think just, I never wanted to, even though a lot of times it's been like, okay, you know, something's got to give and you've got to give something up because you just don't have enough time. I've never wanted to. I mean, wrestling is always and always has been number one, so I was never going to give that away. And I never wanted to be someone who just focused on wrestling and lived a pretty miserable existence elsewhere. Because, you know, wrestling's like acting or any other niche industry. It's very hard to get into and very hard to make money from. I mean, even now, I'm not making that much money from wrestling, obviously, because I'm still working a full-time job. But I never wanted to be someone who struggled. I wanted to juggle it as best I could. And at times, things have given way. You know, my social life outside of wrestling isn't great. I tend to really only hang out with wrestlers because it's all I've got time for. And things like relationships and this and that have always, unfortunately, you know, issues have occurred due to a lack of time and a lack of energy put into that area. But I'm very lucky now that everything is cool with everything else. So I'm one of the head trainers with wrestling, so I can kind of train on my schedule, and my job is really cool with me pursuing pro wrestling, and I've got a really supportive partner who does a lot of the cooking and cleaning and stuff when I don't have the time. I've just been very fortunate. I've always had a lot of understanding from people around me. They've always understood that I'm doing the best and I'm trying to balance life as best I can. But yeah, I don't get a lot of free time. I don't have a lot of downtime. I don't get to sit down and watch TV shows and everyone's talking about, you know, Vikings and Game of Thrones and all this, and I wish I could watch it. I just don't have time for regular stuff like that, but I wouldn't change a thing. I honestly keep it exactly as it is if I had to do it again.
Yeah, I mean, TV shows and whatnot, I mean, it's not for everyone. Like, you don't bloody have to go out and watch stuff because people are talking about it. It's...
No, but I wish I could. I would be so keen on that if I had time, but I just, like I said, something's got to give, and I don't have time for everything.
Yeah.
I just do as much as I can with what I've got, really.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, maybe you're missing out, but maybe you're not. I mean, it's your life. You got to live it the way you see fit and how it works for you.
I figure as well, I mean, you know, pro wrestling is quite taxing on the body, and at any time you could be injured and be forced to retire. And I mean, even at my age, I'm 29, and in wrestling years, it's considered that I'm getting on, and I've probably only got a few years left, or maybe another year or two in my prime, who knows. But I feel like I've got plenty of life left to do the mundane everyday things, and I better make the most of it while I got a relatively unbroken body.
Yeah, see, like, the day will come where you have to retire, and then you'll be sitting down watching TV shows because you've got time, and you'll be like, kind of miss the old life.
Exactly right. I'll be turning on whatever version of Netflix we have, and I'll be watching that Game of Thrones from 20 years ago. I'll get there one day.
Yeah, but then you'll be like, no, I just want to be back in the ring again.
That's what I fear. I feel like I wouldn't really miss it, and you know, time off would be great, but from what I hear, when you do take a long period off, you miss it more than ever. So
yeah,
fortunately, I've never had to take longer than probably 2 months off at a time, so I've never felt that need to get back in the ring and that desire to keep at it.
I think it's like with anything that you're passionate about, if it's taken away from you, you just want to get back to it.
Yeah, for sure, definitely.
A couple of months ago, I broke my foot, and it wasn't anything exciting. I wasn't jumping off a building or, you know, whatever. It was just I slipped over at the supermarket, and the kind of break it was, it's like, well, you can't put pressure on it, so you can't walk, and just realizing, like, I don't want to be stuck doing nothing all day. Just exactly. Missing the smallest things, like just being able to go for a 5-minute walk outside, and I, you know, just not being able to do it. And yeah, then as soon as that thing came off, it's like, I want to go do everything. And then realizing my foot's not quite healed, I can't go out and do everything.
It's well, just, yeah, I mean, you know, you don't know what you got till it's gone.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I always fear. I always fear losing something and then missing it.
So. Yeah, now I'm sort of appreciating every step I take that I can walk.
Exactly.
And I think, yeah, you just really got to appreciate everything. Like,
I
think that's important in life.
Yeah, of course. And I've found that that's been the biggest thing for just with my life. Obviously, knowing that any match you have or any opportunity you have could be the last big opportunity. So making the most of it and appreciating it for what it is and not thinking, oh, this is great, but it's not, you know, it's not WrestleMania or it's not this or that. So just making the most of everything and even just every day that I've got free to just hang out at the beach or you know, go out for dinner or something, you know, just making the most of every little thing. Because I think that's what pro wrestling has taught me, is just that nothing lasts forever. There's been that many times when all of a sudden the rug's been pulled out from under me and I'm no longer wrestling in a certain place or the promotion closed down or this or that. So you've really got to make the most of every moment.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so important to do.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a good life lesson to learn, that's for sure.
Yeah. Pro wrestling, I mean, as many bad things as it teaches you, as many I guess negative habits as it could teach you.
Mm.
At the same time, there's a lot to learn about life from it, and things like that, and just, you know, the fact that nothing's guaranteed,
and
anything could happen, anything can change at any moment. That's a big life lesson to learn.
Yeah, and you see it. I mean, especially just like watching the big product. Like, you just realize, like, one day someone's got the title, the next day they have to relinquish it because they got injured, and you just realize, like, you know, shit can happen to those people, shit can happen to anybody.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it can happen in the positive. You know, you can get a major opportunity like I received and have no idea that it's coming. It can go both ways. So,
absolutely.
You've always got to be ready for everything.
Yeah. Like, you said you started when you were 15. Are you actually allowed to start when you're that young?
It depends where you go. I mean, officially, I started proper training when I was 15. In more recent years, it seems to be that 16 to 18 is the minimum age, but back then it was 15. So as soon as I turned 15, I was – actually, no, I think it might have been 14, 13 or 14. But it definitely used to be a bit more relaxed. Mm. But I actually started unofficially when I was 13. I trained for a couple of years I guess it was they give it the term backyard wrestling. It wasn't in a backyard. It was actually in a proper ring in a kickboxing dojo. But the people I was training with weren't exactly professionally trained, which at first I didn't know. I didn't realize, but I enjoyed it anyway. So I had a couple of years of training once a week, and I guess we had no idea what we were doing. But yeah, as soon as I turned 15, and they said I could go down to a place called the Monster Factory in Salisbury. That's when I officially started. I mean, if you ask me, a little bit young, and even back then, I mean, technically I probably wasn't too bad, but I looked like a little kid and my body obviously wasn't developed, so I definitely wouldn't recommend it now.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think about it, like, that seems like so young.
Yeah, it certainly is. And, I mean, it's also from a obviously, it's not great on the body, land you on a hard wooden ring over and over, and not when your body's not developed yet. But just from a mental aspect, I found that a lot of the people that did start young, they very quickly dropped out, whether they didn't have the discipline for it yet or whether just the wonders of life got in the way. But it was very rare that someone who started that young actually stuck with it. So generally, I recommend, you know, 18 is a perfect age once you're actually an adult and you've experienced a bit of life and you know what you want and that kind of thing.
So what more actually, like, was it like the fact that you were just completely obsessed that had you just staying with it?
Yeah, 100%. It would be interesting to go back and see how training was back then, because obviously with that level of inexperience, everything seemed really hard and that kind of thing. But from what I remember at the time, it was wrestling was tough and it was brutal and it was really no mercy. I mean, we were forced to land over and over on our backs. And I very distinctly remember always getting in my friend's dad's car after training. And he would drive us all the way back home. And I remember constantly feeling like I was going to throw up. Whether that was mild concussion or just exhaustion, I just remember I'd get home and I'd have to go straight to sleep and I couldn't eat and my just bones and muscles ached and it wasn't pleasant. It just wasn't fun, but there were no options. I had to do it. That's all I wanted. And if that's what I had to go through, that's what I had to go through. But that's the only thing that I knew I wanted from life. There was nothing else that interested me and nothing else I wanted more than just to have a match in front of a live audience.
I just listening to you now, I forgot what I was going to ask you. Oh yeah, like what did your parents think about it? Like at that young age, did they know? Were you allowed?
Yeah, I mean they knew. I always had very very chilled parents. They tended to be pretty trustworthy of me, and they let me go off and experience life for myself.
Lucky.
Which was very fortunate.
Yeah.
In some ways, it probably led me, I wouldn't say led me on a wrong path, but I definitely learned from my own mistakes by being given that much freedom. But they definitely knew about it, because sometimes they would take me to shows and even before I started professionally training, I remember my parents taking me to friends' backyards where we'd hit each other with chairs and ladders and all sorts and really dumb, and I'm sure they knew about it, but I think, I guess they just wanted me to learn myself, and they were cool with it. Maybe they didn't know the extent of what we were doing, or maybe they thought it was a little bit more organized and professionally run than it was when we were in friends' backyards, but they definitely let me do it, and my dad's been to practically every match I've ever had in South Australia since. So
that's pretty cool.
14 years, and I think he might have missed a handful of shows at the most. He's always there just on his own and always sitting there watching. So and my mum's in the same boat. She's at most shows too. So they've been extremely supportive since the first day.
That's pretty cool.
And yeah. I can hear myself. That's it. I've seen so many kids come in and obviously their parents have no idea about it, and their parents don't even know the half of what they're doing. And I don't know, that must be a pretty tough existence to try to keep something that's so big from parents and stuff, especially when it's so cool to have them support you and come to shows and actually enjoy what you're doing. It would be hard to keep that and have to keep it as your little secret kind of thing.
Yeah, see, if I was that age, like 13 or 15, and I said to my parents, oh, I'm going to go train to be a wrestler, they would have been like, no, you're not fucking leaving the house.
Yeah.
Especially with the amount at that age that I was watching it and obsessed with it. I still am. I mean, let's face it.
I think that's most people, to be honest. I think that's how most parents
would. I mean, even if I was, 22 years old, and I said, yeah, I'm going to go train and be a wrestler, they'd be like, nah, you're fucking not moving from that couch, young lady. Even though I wasn't living at home at the time, I still wouldn't have been allowed. And I did, I did know somebody back in my early 20s who's like, they were training and they're like, oh, you should come with me and you could be my manager or something. And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not in any shape at all to kind of do anything, because I already knew back then my body was just shithouse.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could have been great, really, but no, my body held me back. Nah.
It's one of those things where it's, you can be trained and you can obviously change your athletic build and this and that, but it's, I find that sometimes no matter how dedicated you are. Some people just don't have it, or that, you know, they're not built in the right way. It's a very interesting sport, and it's just not for everyone.
Yeah, I can just imagine, like, I definitely, my body was, like, in not great shape, like, pain-wise and all that stuff. I'm like, there's no way I would have made it, like, at all. As cool as it would have been.
Oh, of course.
But I'm like, no, you know what? I'm happy to watch it and analyze it and think I'm a total professional and know what I'm talking about.
At the same time, I'm also jealous of people who can just sit back and watch it as fans, because I just can't do that anymore. I watch it and I just overanalyze and I study it, and I end up watching it just for my own in-ring benefit, and I wish I could just sit back and enjoy. So I'm also envious of people who aren't wrestlers and don't want to be wrestlers.
Yeah, it's so hard to actually sit and watch and enjoy, because as a fan and as someone who has been watching since they were like 5 years old, you just, everything, it just becomes, it's so personal. It's like when you see something bad happen and you get so upset about it, or they're not giving the opportunities to who you want to have the opportunities, and then you get angry about it and it's like, why am I getting so upset about it? You know, it just, you just, it's, As a lifelong fan, it's just like always so intense with everything. It's like, I just want to enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah.
Stop analysing everything.
Yeah, no, I would definitely feel you with that one.
Yeah, a bit of a sad, I don't know, sad wrestling fan.
Yeah.
But again, I
probably watch more UFC now than I do wrestling, and it's just for that fact. I feel like I can still cheer people on and still enjoy it just as a fan.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that.
Yeah,
I don't mind watching a bit of that as well.
Yeah, for sure.
It's always good, but I like anything to do with physical violence. That doesn't sound great, but yeah, when people are hitting each other, it's great.
I think it's a primal thing.
Yeah,
I was listening to a podcast today where they were talking about the science behind people watching mixed martial arts and that kind of thing, and how there's a primal instinct about it, and how people are just drawn to people fighting in its most basic and most natural form. So I'm sure there's something to that.
Yeah, I think so. I also think there's something to, like, the fact that, like, I enjoy playing fighting games, and I feel like for me, I'm getting out my aggression with life or whatever on that game, and then I'm not actually out there smacking the shit out of someone in real life. Yeah. I'm doing it on a game.
Yeah, well, it's legal.
Yeah, I think it stops me from going to jail from bashing up someone randomly on the street because I'm so angry or for whatever reason. I think it's kind of the same thing when you're watching something like UFC. It's sort of almost, you're living it vicariously because you're watching people beat the crap out of each other.
Of course.
And then you're not,
get hurt and yeah, you're not broken.
And you're not actually going to do it to someone.
Yeah, that's true. That's definitely true.
I guess in wrestling, you're still kind of hitting someone, but not, like, it's not a fight.
You know, actively to maim and dismember them and put them out of action for the rest of their career.
Yeah. You're not actually...
Not that that's what they're
doing. You're not purposely hurting them.
No, exactly not. Exactly.
Unless, I don't know, maybe if they're an arsehole, you might hit them a little bit harder. I don't know how it works.
Not if you're...
Maybe that's something I just imagined in my head.
Some people, that's it. How they work. But again, if you're a professional, there's other ways to do things like that.
Yeah. Ethically, I don't think people should do that. I just imagine it happens.
No, of course not. I mean, I kind of put pro wrestling in the same boat as acting or work in a way. And it's not on to the liberties and take advantage of people who are giving their body and their health, safety in your hands, really.
Yeah, exactly.
Whether you've got a problem or not.
But yeah.
Unfortunately, egos do get in the way sometimes. Actually, a lot of the times.
I think maybe more than sometimes from what I can imagine, I guess.
Yeah, no, you're correct.
So I think it's good to keep your ego in check, though. I mean, I know for some people they can't or don't realise it, but I think it's important as a human being to kind of keep yourself in check.
Yeah, 100%.
Bring yourself back down to reality.
Well, I think naturally that's just, you do get knocked back down to reality, and it's the same with any sport or with martial arts or even pro wrestling. It's those who do it for the wrong reasons tend to get weeded out eventually.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's with a lot of things too.
Yeah, of course.
Not just those specific things, but yeah.
No.
So you pretty much get like no downtime, but if you get downtime, is there something specific that you enjoy doing or want to do?
Very simple things, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's boring to say, but I just love reading a good book.
Hey, books are awesome.
Honestly, if I get downtime, it's usually just me and the girlfriend going down to the beach or going somewhere and, you know, reading a book or just eating a decent breakfast. That's pretty much, we try to at least make time at least once a week to go out somewhere and just get out in the sun and basically just read and hang out. It's pretty much one of my favorite things to do. Nothing too exciting. I love going to live music. Since I was in high school, I was regularly going to see live bands. And I don't go as much anymore, but that's definitely another thing that I've always been interested in. I feel like the one thing I've always wanted to do, I've crossed that many things off my bucket list, but the one thing I always wanted to do was be the singer of a metal band, and I never could, so...
Maybe you can slowly work on it.
What's that?
Maybe you can slowly work on it. That can sort of be your after-wrestling career.
I feel like I'm just too old now. But, I live vicariously through other bands, so yeah. I love seeing them live, and I get a real kick out of pretending that I'm up there with them, I guess.
You know, I think the simple things are always great. Like, I don't know what the weather's been like in Adelaide, but, you know, I remember that even in winter, Adelaide would still get quite a bit of sun. And since I made the move to Melbourne, like, my skin was this beautiful, like, light brown colour, and then I've just gone completely white because we just don't get sun.
So, I feel like times have changed and Adelaide's getting colder and wetter than ever, but no, anytime there's any sunshine, I'm definitely out there. Got to make the most of it.
And I have this vision in my head that Adelaide just still gets lots of sun.
I don't think it's too much different to Melbourne, to be honest. Or at least this year anyway. I can barely remember a day when it wasn't pouring with rain.
Oh, God, the rain just took away. I want the warm. Yeah, I want the sun. Depressing.
I mean, we had the first day of spring, we had the sun come out, and it was a pretty amazing day, and it was just funny taking note of the difference in mood. I was like, oh, I've been miserable the last 3 months. Who would have known?
Yeah, there's always that winter depression because the sun definitely makes you more happy.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was funny that, like, you know, before I moved, we were having, like, all the big heat waves and stuff in Adelaide, and then I come here and I'm like, I'm white as a ghost. There's no sun in this damn city. Why did I move? I like sun.
Yeah. No, Melbourne's a cool place, but that weather can be brutal. That can be rough.
Yeah, it's been a pretty rough winter. I just want summer.
Yeah, exactly.
Please be sun this summer. If not, might just have to move to Adelaide for 3 months.
It pretty quickly will go from, oh, this is really nice, to, oh, get me out of here, just get me air conditioning. So, No, I mean, at the same time, you can't complain because you go to most countries and it's either it's either one extreme to the other, or it's just permanently raining, or I think we get it pretty good in Australia.
Yeah. I'll probably be like, if we don't get much sun, I'll be like, no, I'm going back to Adelaide for a bit and hoping there's sun in Adelaide.
Good choice.
Yeah. Gotta love the old Adelaide. As Adelaideans, if someone's going there, like, you know, visiting the city, is there anywhere in particular you're like, oh, this is the place you should check out? Where do you tell people to go?
I always say Glenelg. I've got a massive soft spot for Glenelg.
I think we all
especially
do.
Especially in the last couple of years, it's, I wouldn't say it's been massively boosted, but just some of the places in Glenelg to go to for food or whatever are much better now than they were even a couple of years ago. So Glenelg's my go-to, and I just love the place. I generally stick to the more beachy areas, so Glenelg, Kenyon Beach, Brighton Beach. But I do love Adelaide, like, and I always knew I loved it, but my girlfriend's from Perth, and when she came over and moved over here, I decided, you know, I'd show her around the place, and I very quickly realized how amazing some of our, or a lot of our city is. So.
Yeah, you kind of notice that when you're taking someone around.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, we're surrounded by some incredible hills, and it doesn't take that long to get to them, which is awesome.
Yeah.
There's no crazy traffic. So, you know, 20 minutes and we're already in some incredible areas overlooking the entire city. Yeah, so that's a cool thing.
Yeah, I would definitely say the hills. The hills are great. And, yeah, like I said, it doesn't take that long to get anywhere. that's the beauty of Adelaide. Like, the city itself, you can walk from one end to the other in, like, 45 minutes.
Yeah.
I remember doing that back in the early 20s of, like, going to clubs and pubs and getting pissed and walking around at 5 a.m. in the city getting your pie floater and stuff. I don't know if that's still a thing in the city anymore.
Of course it is. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Pie floaters will be forever.
Pie floaters are the best. And then you come here and everyone's like, what the fuck's a pie floater? And then tell them what it is. They're like, that's disgusting. It's like, it's not disgusting. It's not disgusting at 5 a.m. when you're drunk, all right?
I've introduced that many Australian professional wrestlers to pie floaters, and I don't think I've had a bad review yet.
Oh, it's the best. I wish somewhere in Melbourne would just have a pie floater on a Saturday night, just like there. I'd be like, oh, yum. Give me one.
I'd rather keep it as an Adelaide thing. I mean,
yeah,
we've already had Farmers Union iced coffee start to infiltrate interstate, and we've had other delicacies make their way interstate.
Yeah, what's the sausage roll and pies from Adelaide? I can't think of what they're called. The
Billy's?
Yeah, is it Billy's?
Billy's is our brand.
Yeah, because that's last few years that's been here as well. And
it's just not the same when it does that. It gets watered down. It's just not the same.
Yeah, and like the big one for us was yo-yo biscuits, like.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, in Adelaide. So when we go to Adelaide, bring back a sack of yo-yo biscuits. But then we found an IGA not that far actually stocks yo-yo biscuits. So
it's not the same. It's like when Krispy Kreme came to Adelaide. That novelty. Like, everyone used to go to Melbourne and fly back with a...
With Krispy Kremes?
And now it's nothing. No one cares about Krispy Kreme.
Yeah. But I like my slice of Adelaide in Melbourne.
It is cool. It's a cool place. It's a cool little place. I feel like you need to know where to go and you need to know people from there. Otherwise, it probably just seems like a small city with nothing to do. But if you know where to go and you know what to do and what to eat, I love it. It's the coolest place.
Yeah, definitely miss a bit of Adelaide. Like, I, having done, like, the Melbourne Museum, and then I'm kind of like, I like the Adelaide one better. It's like, but that's like my childhood thing, was like going to the Adelaide Museum and like, you know, the ancient Egyptian room has been the same forever.
Yeah.
It hasn't changed since I was a kid to like going there and last year or the year before or whenever it was.
Yeah, I actually took my class there at the end of last year, so it's exactly as I remember it as a kid.
Yeah, it is. I mean, they've done some upgrades, but it's still pretty much the same.
Yeah.
No, I took my niece there, and it was fun going, this is where I grew up, and I used to come to the museum all the time. And then we went to the art gallery, and that's still just essentially the same, but then they get different things in there, and it's so cool. And I'm like, that's like the best art gallery. It's just in little old Adelaide.
I feel like everyone likes how simple life was in the 90s, and I feel like even though Adelaide has updated, it still has that kind of simple vibe to it.
Yeah. It's nice to be able to go back to Adelaide and still be able to go to, like, Rundle Mall, and the mall's balls are still there.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm sure people, like, are going to go, what the fuck are mall's balls? There's these two giant balls in the middle of the mall.
Yep. Huge silver balls on top of each other.
Yeah.
Which is a common meeting place for 14-year-olds who have been chatting through MSN Messenger.
Yeah, or if you're wagging school, you'd be like, oh, where do you want to meet? Just mall's balls.
Exactly.
You'll see, we're like, I think I'm maybe 3 years older than you, so at least we kind of grew up in the same kind of era, so we, you know, did the same things probably.
Sure, yeah.
At least you can kind of relate to that a little bit.
Definitely.
But it's always good to talk about good old Adelaide.
Yes. Everyone's got similar stories, which is good.
Yeah, but it's also cool to kind of, you know, be able to talk to someone who is from Adelaide, but, like, you know, you've kind of, you know, in the wrestling community, I guess, you know, your name's more out there because of the CWC, but, you know, the fact that, you know, someone from Adelaide actually got to do it is kind of fucking awesome.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, it's not someone from Melbourne or wherever. You know, it's Adelaide. You're from Adelaide, and that's awesome.
It's always good when a small town kid makes it. But being the Australian to be on WWE television is pretty cool when you think about it. I don't think I realised that was the case until afterwards. But yeah, it's a cool thing to think about. You've had people from Melbourne and Sydney and even Perth recently make it over there, but yeah, only one from little old Adelaide.
Yeah, you made your mark. I was terribly excited because, you know, you're from Adelaide. It's awesome. That's the only reason I like you. You're from Adelaide, Max. No, you happen to be talented as well. There is that too.
That's second.
Second. It's always about the Adelaide.
Exactly.
It's always the Adelaide.
Otherwise, all we've got is Leighton Hewitt, and he's not the most popular guy.
No. I think Adelaide needs more awesome stars, I think.
Exactly.
I mean, there's you, there's me. We can represent pretty well.
Indeed.
not that many people know who I am. Maybe they do. I don't know.
Oh, they will now. All 8 listeners from my Twitter feed.
Yeah, there we go. I'm internet famous. It's cool.
Exactly right.
Hey, I mean, at least I can say I've been recognised in person for my podcasting, so that's cool.
Well, that's good.
Because it's like, it's not my face, it's my voice.
Yeah.
So that's good. 100%.
At least you've remained relatively anonymous as well.
Yeah, I can walk around Melbourne generally okay without people recognising me and hounding me on the street for my autograph.
Definitely. Just keep your mouth shut and you're good.
And then I'll be good. Yeah, totally. So, as someone, I guess you've been doing this like over half your life by now, surely.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be exactly half my life.
Yeah. What advice do you give people that want to maybe get into it, or, you know, or if someone's just even wanting to pursue something they've thought about but maybe don't have the guts to do, but, you know, you got to put them over the edge to try and do what they want to do?
Don't do it then.
Don't do it.
No.
Stay at home. Don't follow your dreams.
I feel like the cliche thing is to say, you know, nothing's impossible, which to an extent is true, but I just feel like the formula for success is just consistency and being consistent and seeking out as much knowledge, and that in wrestling the term is to say that you're a student of the game. So that means that, you know, you make it your life. You eat it, you breathe it, you sleep it, etc. So I think if you stay consistent, you surround yourself with the right people and you do everything you can to succeed, I feel like the cream will always rise to the top. I mean, for Australian wrestlers, for the longest time, we were considered that there's no chance any of us will make it to America or make it to the WWE. And until about 5 years ago, there were zero Australians in the WWE for 20 or 30 years. In the last couple of years, there's been eight of us signed, which is incredible. The percentage of Australians over there right now is just huge. It's probably about 10% of their developmental roster or their NXT roster is Australian, which is unbelievable. And we were always the people who never had much exposure. Even today, we don't have much exposure outside of people who come to local shows, and people generally don't know much about us, but we seem to be making our mark. And I think that's because as Australians, we kept consistent, we loved it, and we didn't do it to become famous. We did it because we loved it, and that meant that we kept going. We kept going, whether we made it or not. We were always going to keep going, and we, at the same time, we probably all have a little bit of a chip on our shoulder too, and we know that we're overlooked, and we want people to see what we're about. So I feel like as long as you incorporate those things and you don't cheat yourself, I feel like everyone's got any chance of success that they want.
Yeah, I think so too. I think you've got to really want it, but you also have to work hard, because I think especially kind of in this age where people just feel so entitled to things, it's like things aren't going to get handed to you. You've really got to work hard for it.
Exactly right. And attitude's everything. I've seen that many people who have maybe not made it, and it's frustrated them, and it's just given them a bad attitude about it, and they've been on and off with it. And then I've seen others, you know, like myself, who thought, okay, if I never make it to the WWE, if I never achieve my ultimate dream, that's cool, because I've already done more than I ever thought I would, and I'm loving what I'm doing, and I'm having fun. And that's the thing, like I won't say that I trained at 100% all the time, and I obviously had peaks and valleys, and there were times when I probably was being a little bit slack or lazy, but the one thing I did do was keep consistent, and I never stopped, and I kept going. And once you keep at it for long enough and enough people see you, and again, you know, the cream always rises to the top. You can do it as long as you do it for the right reasons, I feel.
Yeah, I think so too. I think you hit the nail on the head.
I hope so.
That's the right saying, isn't it?
Yes, I believe so.
I think it is. I think with that, we'll close up the podcast. And as always, thank you for joining me on this wonderful journey through all the numerous things we've discussed.
No, that's it. Like I said, it's always good to talk about things other than wrestling.
Which we tried to do, but it kind of kept going back to wrestling.
Well, and that's my life.
it's kind of in your life, though, so... Sorry, I cut you off.
I was going to say, it's cool in the way that wrestling can relate to so many other things too, and teach so many life lessons and this and that, and there's always so many cool stories as well. So,
yeah.
No, it's good to talk about something other than the generic professional wrestling questions.
Yeah, I can say, even as a fan or a crazy fan, like, just so many things I've experienced was due to wrestling. Like, my first trip to Melbourne by myself was because I came out in 2002 to see the big WWE show, and I hadn't been here for so long. And, you know, because of that, I had the opportunity to actually go out on my own and come to Melbourne.
Excellent.
So, I mean, just things like that, like random things and meeting so many people just through wrestling. Like, I owe so much to it as just someone who enjoys watching it. It's crazy.
Exactly. It's I feel like it's such an interesting business, and it takes, I wouldn't say an odd person, but you know, it's a very niche audience, and people who watch wrestling tend to also get along with other people who enjoy it, and I've seen a lot of friendships and families and things like that built from it, and they're some of the strongest bonds you've ever seen. So it's a pretty cool thing, and unless you're in it, I feel like you can't really understand the true extent of what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's just, I think it's just something, it's something special. And as someone who's, I mean, wrestling in my life for as long as I can remember, maybe like 26 years or something, and that, I just feel like, I feel like it was in my genes to love it, because I was told stories of like my grandparents, and these are like, you know, Italian immigrants, like going to watch live wrestling in Adelaide or wherever it was at the time, and that they'd, you know, then if it was on TV, they'd watch it, and then, you know, it must have skipped a generation straight to me. And then I'm the one who's like obsessively watching it, and, you know, always trying to encourage other people to enjoy it, even if they don't.
No, of course.
And of course, you know, when the opportunity arises and like some legend comes around and visits, and it's like, you know, I watch them growing up, it's so cool to meet them and whatnot, like, it's cool.
I think
I think my greatest thrill, I guess, this is kind of embarrassing, as a fan, was like, I think maybe the first time I really watched it, I think, was when The Undertaker debuted.
Yep.
And so he'd always been my favourite. And on one of the tours when they came to Melbourne, because they weren't going to Adelaide back then, I was in the Crown Casino. It was like 1 a.m, and I saw him there, and I'm like, I don't care how ridiculous it is, I have to go meet The Undertaker. So 1 a.m... at the casino, I go up to him, introduce myself, tell him he's been my all-time favorite, inspiration and everything, and so embarrassing. Didn't even get a photo, got his autograph.
And I'm sure even though someone like that, you know, someone like The Undertaker would obviously get that regularly.
It'd be nothing to him, and I'm just like, oh my God, it's so embarrassing.
No, but I mean, that's generally part of why everyone does it. I know, from a personal standpoint, for many others, it's that acknowledgement, not just from your peers, but also from people who support what you do. That's everything. That's more than the money and the travel and opportunities like that. It's being told that you are influencing someone else's life and making your mark on someone else. I think that's a huge thing for everyone, no matter what level of fame they've achieved.
Do you get that from fans or local fans or?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, we've got a lot of local fans, and probably pretty well known amongst Australian fans. But even since the WWE stint, just through social media, the outreach from fans has been insane. It's been huge, and that would be a good part of why I do it. It's not to become famous or make $1 million, because the chances of that are quite slim, even though I have been or am in the top, you know, promotion. But just knowing that you've influenced someone's life, or that they're supporting you and they really enjoy what you do, that's the biggest thrill of all.
Yeah. Have you had an embarrassing fan moment? For you as a fan?
Good question. It's been that many years since I've been the super fan. And when I was, I mean, it was, I never really went to watch, I only went to watch local shows. I never really saw WWE because they hadn't come to Australia yet. So I can't say there's any too embarrassing moments as a super fan. I certainly, from probably the ages of 11 to 13, I was probably a little bit nuts on the local scene when I used to go to local Adelaide shows. And I'm sure I pestered, you know, pestered the wrestlers a lot, but since I started, I tried to keep it pretty professional.
You know, it's funny that, you know, we could have crossed paths at a local show back in our early years and just never know.
Yeah, more than likely.
Funny to think about.
I was talking to one of the local professional wrestlers, Steve O'Neill. He was probably the biggest name when I first started watching as an 11-year-old in the Adelaide scene. And he himself was probably only 18 or 19 at the time. But being a young kid and you're seeing this guy in person, and he was my idol. And it's funny because now I think he messaged me or he sent me a Facebook about how cool it was to see me in the WWE. And I was just thinking, like, oh, you know, this is my idol here. Even though he's only wrestled in Adelaide or yeah, in Melbourne interstate, and he probably hasn't wrestled in about 10 years. And, you know, with all due respect, probably hasn't made it that far in wrestling, but I still kind of feel a little bit fanboyish when I'm talking to the guy, and he says he's feeling the same way about me. So it's interesting. It's interesting the way it goes full circle like that.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So for people listening who may not know, where can people find you on the interwebs?
I'm not too hard to find. I'm all over every social media platform. I'm sure I still have a MySpace floating around somewhere. but if you look up Damien Slater on Twitter or Facebook, you can find my pages on there. I'm always very receptive to fans and things like that. I always try to contact people back, as crazy as it gets. But yeah, I mean, hit me up if anyone wants information on how they can see local events. Then I generally advertise them. Wrestle Rampage in Adelaide is my home promotion that I wrestle for, and we run shows in Woodville in the western suburbs. So we have a huge show coming up November 12th, which has a tables, ladders and chairs main event, which I'm in, which isn't the most fun of experiences, but it should be quite a spectacle for the fans.
I might have to make the trip to Adelaide just for that.
Yeah, that's going to be that's going to be a rough night, but that's probably one of, if not the biggest match, I would say, ever held on Australian soil. There's a lot of big names in that match, and it's my first match back with Wrestle Rampage after wrestling for the WWE. So personally, it's a huge thing for me. And obviously keep supporting the WWE. If you don't have the WWE network, then get on it. And they have all their shows on demand, so you can watch my time in the Cruiserweight Classic through that WWE network. And you get the first month free, so that's even better.
And I've had the network since the day it launched, even though Australia didn't have it at the time.
Yeah.
I did the naughty.
I'll pretend I didn't hear that.
Yeah. It's all fine now because it's in Australia.
As long as we're supporting, I feel like that's all that matters.
Yeah, like there's no way I wasn't gonna get it. I watch it all the time. The beautiful thing is, like, I'm like, oh, now I want to go back and watch this match from freaking 15 years ago, and it's like there. It's like amazing.
Yeah,
it's like there's no videotapes anymore. It's like I don't have to. I don't have to, like, go out and find videotapes anymore.
Exactly. I got rid of all of my DVDs. I gave them to all of our trainees at the Wrestle Rampage Dojo because I certainly didn't need them anymore. So, yeah, the network's an incredible thing for any pro wrestling fan of any era, because whatever you want to watch, whatever you've seen as a kid or growing up, it's all there.
It's all there. It's great to just sit back and watch things that just bring back memories.
Definitely, definitely.
And they've got so much on that. It's crazy. Yeah, thank you once again for doing the show. I really appreciate it.
Anytime.